suburb East Jerusalem, and 1,000 more in existing colonial settlements in the West Bank. In other news from around the world, the leaders of India and Pakistan are not getting along at that regional confidence-building summit in Kazakhstan. The two refused to shake hands as the meeting went on. And in fact, General Musharraf, the non-elected leader of Pakistan, said, quote, "We cannot condone the rapacious policies of certain states that forcibly occupy territory and deny freedom to peoples for decades," end quote. That, of course, a reference to Indian-administered Kashmir, which has a Hindu-backed government over a majority Muslim population. And in the meantime, Prime Minister Vajpayee insisted that the number of cross-border attacks and infiltrations had increased in recent weeks. But that's not the assessment of the leaders of Russia and the United States, both of whom credited Musharraf with genuine efforts to control the border. President Vladimir Putin said that Pakistan's actions were encouraging and invited both leaders to a summit in Moscow. And in Washington yesterday, the State Department said, "We do have indications that Pakistani actions go beyond words." Meanwhile, the cross-border skirmishes with machine guns and mortars continued. Several residents near the Kashmir border zone were killed in these skirmishes. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, as well as Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage, are due there this week for talks on trying to mitigate a conventional war, as well as ensuring command and control for the nuclear weapons that are possessed by both states. In other news this morning, the President of the United States stood before a banner at the headquarters of the National Security Agency at Fort Meade. That banner said, and here we quote, "We won't back down, never did, and never will," end quote. Bush urged Congress, while he stood there, not to do too much investigating of the pre-September intelligence failures of his administration, saying that inquiries outside of existing committees would be, quote, "tying up valuable assets and time and possibly jeopardizing sources of intelligence." The statement by Bush comes after claims by Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak to have issued an al-Qaeda warning just before September 11th. It comes after revelations that the CIA had been tracking two of the airline hijackers but did not apprise the FBI of their entry into this country. And it came after the squashing of several terror investigations by the FBI and Justice Department. Bush insisted again as he stood in front of the headquarters of what those in the know deny knowledge of as the no such agency. Bush said, "I've seen no evidence today that this country could have prevented the attack." However, members of Congress met secretly with intelligence officials yesterday and tomorrow are planning hearings with FBI Director Robert Mueller. In the meantime, the Justice Department, following upon its isolation of Arab immigrants, has a new proposal. The Justice Department is proposing new regulations this week that would have tens of thousands of Middle Eastern and Muslim visa holders be required to be fingerprinted upon their entry into the United States. In other news this morning, Zimbabwean authorities detained the president and secretary of the Law Society of Zimbabwe last night on charges of possessing or writing subversive documents urging violence and spreading falsehoods against the state. Part of a wave of new arrests under the Public Order and Security Act, a draconian law passed after the March elections aimed at thwarting national action that has been proposed by Morgan Tsvangirai, the candidate who was defeated when Robert Mugabe was returned to the presidency during the election. His Movement for Democratic Change says that a dozen reporters have been arrested and members of his party have been harassed. That follows his lawsuit demanding a rerun of the election. Mugabe's supporters accused Tsvangirai of representing British interests. The leaders of the Law Society, however, remained in custody overnight, even though the execution of a search warrant failed to recover the purported letters to Tsvangirai and to the British embassy, which allegedly urged violent street protests. President Bush also dissed the Environmental Protection Agency's warning of global warming in a report that was presented to the United Nations this week. It says that the consistent rise in global temperatures is attributable to fossil fuels and to greenhouse gases, but it stopped short of recommending mandatory controls, favoring instead Bush's ideal of corporate pollution credits. Bush characterized the report as bureaucratic, and that comes just days after the ratification of the Kyoto Protocol by Japan and various European governments. In other news this morning, a break in the case of the assassination of a women's health doctor here in New York State. James Kopp, who is the suspect in the murder in 1998 of Barnett Slepian upstate here in New York, a doctor who did perform abortions, is being extradited to the United States and is en route from France. He left with marshals earlier this morning. This is the first time that American authorities were able to take custody of him after he gave up his fight against extradition to the United States for that murder. Federal charges say that he violated the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances law, and he's being charged with second-degree murder, first-degree reckless endangerment, and criminal possession of a weapon. In other news from the New York region, there is now to be the distribution of potassium iodide pills to residents near Indian Point. Potassium iodide, of course, is used in the Hail Mary plan of preventing radioactive iodine from reaching the thyroid. That is one of the things that Westchester County officials say is necessary, such that on Saturday the pills would be distributed for the next three Saturdays in June at local schools. Journalists at the Washington Post are withholding their names and bylines from the articles, photographs, and artwork that they're presenting because of a dispute with management. Neither the foreign correspondents or writers for the National, Style, Sports, or Metro sections are appearing with any bylines. The action comes after the breakdown of talks between the Post and the Guild after a contract expired. The issues are wages, vacations, and health plans, and union representatives said that we hoped to get the attention of the management. And finally, these two other developments from here in the region. In New York City, the only major metropolitan or civil union that is more white than the police department is the firefighters union. And the New York Fire Department is trying to remedy that with an advertising campaign to recruit women and other non-whites. The fire department is 93% male and white, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg says the city is committed to filling its ranks with qualified men and women who represent different communities. And finally, out on Long Island, while TV viewers endure the plutography of the ABC series on the Hamptons, a study comes in that indicates that the community of Long Island is the nation's most segregated suburb. David Rusk, the consultant who did the study and the former mayor of Albuquerque, is saying that 74% of the African-American residents of Long Island would have to move in order for there to be an even distribution of their representation on Long Island. According to Rusk, the only places more segregated are cities such as Detroit, Milwaukee, and Chicago. In New York, I'm Robert Knight for Wake Up Call.
Well, thank you very much for that, Robert. It is 8:09. You are listening to WBAI in New York. Coming up immediately will be a report to the listener. Stay tuned. Thank you. that you, Janice K? We had a report from Janice K. Bryan, but it seems that we have lost her. Maybe you can call me right back, Janice, and we'll get you on the air. About a bylaws meeting, a special bylaws meeting that is going to be taking place. So as soon as Janice calls us back, we'll get that information out. I don't know whether you're listening on the phone or... let's try this. Is that you, Janice K?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's me.
All right.
Hey.
You had some information for us.
Yes, I did. I'm calling you from the gym, trying to get that blood pressure down. And one thing that's going to help me get my blood pressure down is just getting this bylaws revision process done. And this Saturday, we're having a special session, a special workshop from 10:30 to 4. And we're asking folks to come out and help get some of this work done. We're specifically going to get some actual bullet points, we're calling them, worked out that the board has put together. And we want to attack those and actually get something down on paper so that we can have that to discuss at the next Tuesday meeting and begin preparing to have something for the meeting in June that's going to be in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Saturday is an important day for many people because it's the tribute to the ancestors. And I think that begins at noon, correct?
Correct.
And so if folks could stop by on their way just for a little while, we'll be at 75 Varick Street, 14th floor, beginning at 10:30. And I'm sorry we have that conflict because we really want as many folks as from as many communities as possible to be there. So I know this is going to really cut into the African-American and the African-Caribbean presence, but still, there'll be other times, but hopefully, you know, some folks will be able to show up on Saturday.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that. And once again, that's Saturday at 75 Varick Street.
Yes, and you can take the 1 or 2 or the A or C train to Canal Street, and it's right there, 75 Varick, 14th floor. See you at 10:30 on Saturday morning, hopefully.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bernard.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. And here in the studio this morning is Station Manager Valerie Van Isler, as well as Acting Program Public Affairs Director Matthew Finch. Good morning, Valerie.
Good morning, Bernard. And welcome to the listeners for this June report. We've done a report every month since our return in January, and we are committed to that schedule and to getting back information to you, reporting on developments around the station and what we know of around the network. Want to begin this morning by a very, very big and generous thank you for the support you gave during our May membership drive. It was one of the best drives in the spring we've ever done. We set a goal of $900,000, absolutely needed, every penny of it. At this point, I believe that we've made that goal. It looks like we might be shy by 1,000 here or there, but when all the tallying is complete, I think that we made our goal. There was a discrepancy between the tally book and when the pledges get in, and we finished entering those pledges on Friday afternoon. So great thanks to everybody who called, who supported. Tremendous thanks for the creativity of the programmers who brought in new ideas, new concepts, the programming staff, the program director, all of whom did extraordinary service during this drive. I think the programming was more mission-driven than ever, and that is really what we are about here at WBAI. The fulfillment is already over 50%, which means many of you very thankfully pledged on credit cards, and we deeply appreciate that. The February drive that we had upon a return raised over $1 million, as you know, and we are at 76% fulfillment for that. That means that over the next 4 months, this next quarter, we have to raise $500,000 in order to meet our listener support goal. Our goal this year is $2.5 million. It is huge. So we have to do an August summer fund. More direct mails will have to be done. A telemarketing campaign has to be designed, shaped, and then implemented in order for us to finish up on target by September 30th. So there's a big road ahead and a very difficult one because the summer is a tough period for us and for all the Pacifica stations. On the good news front, we made a commitment here about 2 months ago. We worked with the staff. We got an equipment list together. We got the equipment, and we said it would be here and installed before we started the membership drive in May 8th. And, in fact, that is exactly what happened. So we have new CD players, new decks, a new digital computer in one of our control rooms, all of which part of the transparency and the commitment that we have made here in order to help stabilize and rebuild WBAI. And it's a terribly, terribly, terribly difficult job. The membership is coming back. They were less than 13,000 in January. Now we're up to about 16,500. And this drive that we just completed, looking at the accretions, the new members, I think we've gained another 2,000 or 3,000 members. So we need to be up at 20,000 strong. And we're on the way, and we hope by the end of this fiscal year or perhaps by the end of the calendar year, we will, in fact, have made that goal. Some very positive things have happened. Some very worrisome things have happened. We still face a $5 million debt. The pressure on all of the stations and on the national office is extreme. Over the next few months, we have to raise several hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that is why on June 19th, which is called Juneteenth, there will be a National Day of Programming that will go from station to station, passing the baton around the five Pacifica stations, again, in order to raise money to help us with the terrible debt burden that we have for this year. And we will have to raise nearly another $1 million by the end of October. So it is a mountain of challenge ahead of us, but it's one I hope that we are prepared to meet. This is a tough time, and this particular quarter, as we move toward closure for September 30th, is going to be a very tough period. But we will do all that we can here in terms of the rebuilding, the stabilizing, the getting equipment here, the working on the program schedule, the working with programmers, the work with the national office, and, of course, the relationship to our audience and building that audience that we can, because that's the absolute mandate for this period. On some other fronts, we've had very good and positive talks with the AFTRA on the union negotiations and reached several points of agreement. I hope that we are able to complete that by June or early July. And for the unpaid staff, they have also had many meetings and are now forming a unpaid staff union, all of which on the positive side, all of which will help move the station forward. So good things have happened, strong challenges ahead. A lot of adversity, but also many opportunities to serve this station, to serve our members, and to serve the public in some really important and extraordinary ways.
Okay, we also have Matthew Finch. You're going to go?
Well, I'll just be very quickly. Mark Leosa, who's acting as arts director, has a prior commitment this morning, so he can't be with us. And since the bulk of this is strictly about programming, Jose Santiago of the news department will not be on, but he's listening in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that is. There are two specials that we should alert people to that will be coming up on two successive Sundays. One of them is a project that actually began at WBAI a long, long time ago, which is the James Joyce reading of Ulysses, which became Bloomsday on Broadway at Symphony Space. Mark Leosa was approached a few weeks back to see if we would be interested, at least this year, in being the flagship station of the Bloomsday on Broadway performance. And we're going to be that station. So this will be on, I think, the 16th, Sunday the 16th, beginning at 6:30 after the news. The following week is going to be Gay Pride Day. And we will do a number of hours, certainly from 2 to 6 p.m. and maybe even into the evening, will be devoted to that without FM crew and others participating in that. And there are other things in the hopper as well.
Okay, I guess we can move swiftly to the programming. It's about 20 after 8 and 70 degrees outside. So let's see. We many of you have probably been hearing some of the things that have been said over the air of the last couple of days, and you know that we are in the midst of making some program changes. There are a few things I'd like to clarify, as well as we can talk about the whole process of changing programs, which is never an easy process. It is always very difficult. They're always, since we're not a commercial radio station, we do it a little differently. In commercial radio stations, you come in and you find out that you've been replaced, and that's it. You don't get an opportunity to go to the air or say goodbye or anything like that. But here at listener-sponsored radio, at WBAI, it's a little different. We informed producers that the program council, as well as the program department, had made some changes in the schedule. We've been talking about making changes in the schedule ever since we got back. We inherited a schedule that was pockmarked with a whole lot of holes in it, and that we decided to take the opportunity to try and fill those holes and create some continuity in our program schedule. Continuity is very important in programming, because it allows to develop listenership. Listenership, in our case, develops. It has a direct impact on our ability to survive. Listenership means subscribership, means revenue coming into the station. So we had been informing everyone at every meeting that we've had that there would be program changes. There was, as I said, whenever this happens, it is always difficult. I've been a part of program changes in the past. I've been a part of losing a program. I've been a part of being placed in programs that others, in spaces that others have vacated or been forced to vacate. And so I've seen it from both sides. And there was a lot of talk about the producer who came on Monday evening to say that his program was being taken off, that he hadn't gotten any notice, that the listener should call the program director and call the station manager and call the executive director and the board of directors, and all to try and save what he considered to be a lost program. But the individual was not listening to what was being said, and I can understand that, because when one finds out that one's program has been moved, all people, most people tend to think is that, you know, they've been eliminated. But as a result of the program changes, we have not eliminated any programs. No programs have been eliminated. They have been relocated. There are two programs that we're still trying to find places for, but we're going to talk to the producers. We think that the programs need some work. They have not been able to adequately address the audience that they're targeting, and we want to sit down with them and see if we can figure out some way of dealing with them around bettering their program, and then they too will have the opportunity to come back to the air. But the information that you got about the from individuals that their programs were taken away is false. But that's the risk that we take when we allow producers to go back to the air to express their concern or their outrage about what they feel has been a process that has not that when they're losing their program. And that's, you know, as I said, that's part of how things happen here. Hopefully people will not panic, that we are not, you know, we're here telling you the truth, that people have been relocated into what we think is a better setting for WBAI. It may not be a better setting for them as individuals, but for the radio station, it is the best case scenario for us. There were, let me see, as I said, and it's key to remember that no, regardless of what you've heard, there have been no producers who have been taken off of the air. Everyone has been given an opportunity to continue to program and to continue to produce here at WBAI. These program changes are part, we're doing them in phases. This is the first phase, of course. I was just discussing this with Valerie in the hallway. This will be evaluated at the end of this phase so that we can determine just how well this is going, and we will make adjustments where necessary. So, you know, it's not all that, you know, that because this is the way it is today, that that's the way it's going to remain. We know that it's not going to remain this way. There will be some change, some more changes coming in the future. But the nature of change is that there will be some people who will love the change, and there will be some people who will hate the change. We have over 180 producers when you sit down and look at all of the people involved in the various programs. We have over 90 programs a week, 90 programs a week. That's a lot of programs. I remember going to in San Diego to a program directors conference and showing our program schedule to program directors around the nation. It became the subject of a whole day's conversation. How does one manage this this kind of schedule? They believed that it was impossible to manage it. If we just had, you know, the same people on from 6 to 10 and then from 10 to 12, and then, you know, on each day, it would be very easy to manage. But because we have over 180 producers, over 90 programs, and only 168 hours a week, it becomes extremely difficult. It becomes even more difficult when people go to the air and misrepresent what they've been told. But, you know, that's a part of the gig, too, and that's what we have to deal with, and we'll work our way out of that. But I'm hoping that people who are getting these phone calls and getting them for the first time don't panic and then try and insert themselves into a process in which they really don't know anything about. They have other responsibilities, and I think that they should follow through on that. Now,
Bernard, before we get to cases, can I just lay out some things so that we're on the same page?
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of different statuses that programmers have in the midst of change. There is, as you said, this is not about cancellation or showing people the door. There is a status known as hiatus, and in my experience going back a few years now, that is one of the ways in which you can actually make a smooth transition and a smooth change. And what it involves, it does involve pulling people from the air for a limited period of time, 3 months maybe, and during that time, spots are filled that they had vacated. Other spots are opened during that process as experiments are evaluated. At that point, new slots open up for those people, and they do return to the air. In the meantime, I've talked to a few people already about this. In the meantime, part of the grid, Bernard, that you've laid out allows for spots for experimentation and for pilots, but those spots also allow for some of those producers who are at this time without territory, without airtime territory, to maintain a presence and to do their programming in a new kind of format and to work more closely on the inside. What, you know, and I have to cop to the fact that I've dropped the ball on a few occasions here, and part of it is, again, we're talking about 80 different producers to keep track of, and that people, when you have 80 producers, 180, excuse me, when you have 180 personalities to deal with, some of them, excuse me, are a great remove from the station. They're not listening to the station. And so when they hear a rumor, that has more impact than anything, because that seems to be the only information they're getting. And those people who have been at a remove from the station are the people who are most upset and are the people who we have to work with most closely at this point, because that's a relationship that's dangerous, frankly. For everybody, for the listeners, the fans of the show, the producers concerned, for the people inside the station. If people are are so far away from the information loop, then there is a problem. So in some of the people who are going to be off the air for a few weeks maybe, a few months maybe, this time is going to be used to try to work on the program, to keep their hands in so that they can come back to the air as, once again, as fully vested producers. At different time slots, at different time slots, but this is not that they will be able to come back to the air. I mean, we have one music producer who has been on a forced hiatus since September 11th. That's 9 months that this person has been on the outside, has been extremely patient.
Extremely.
Who represents a community that we do not reach in any other fashion, and who has just as strong an argument for airtime as anybody else here. He has been waiting with his crew for 9 months and has been as understanding as one could possibly be. I would just ask the concerned producers and the concerned hosts to remember that there are people who have been in this status for a lot longer than you will have to be, and they are going to be coming back to the air.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll go to phone calls in a little while, but before we do that, there have been some questions raised as to, you know, Bernard laying out his vision for programming. And, you know, I have worked since I've been here at the radio station always as part of a collective. And I see my vision as part of a collective vision. I see my role as getting people to kind of buy into that vision. And the vision comes out of the history of WBAI as I know it and understand it, as I've participated in it. And that is that unless we can all, or at least a majority of us, it's never going to be all, you know. We want society to work that way where everybody's on the same page. But that's not going to happen. But that we can get a majority of the people to begin to view this institution as a very valuable community-based, community-sponsored institution that we try and bring about, create a media institution that is going to be respected, that can be relied on for truth, that can be a laboratory where creativity can be honed and showcased, where we can also at the same time mobilize people to bring about positive social change. And that's pretty much my vision of what WBAI is all about. Is there, after saying that, is there a direct formula or direct schematic that you can put in place or floor plan to do that? No, it is an ever-changing and evolving thing. There are some things that will work today that won't work tomorrow. As conditions change in society, we have to also make the changes. And we have to make changes in order to grow. Change is inevitable in order to grow. And we're trying to make positive change. Change just is not valueless. It can also be negative change. We're attempting to make positive change. We have a program council made up of producers here, as well as you know, folks who were in supervisory positions here, as well as producers. And we went over a lot of this, all of this material, you know, the material, I mean, I'm looking at the grid here, about making some of these changes. And for the most part, we agreed on all of the things that needed to be done. And first talking about what needed to be done. And we're trying to bring about changes that will increase our listenership. Now, one of the things that folks are saying, you know, I don't like the fact that you would take off a program because it's not raising any money. Well, there's some truth to that. You know, we also provide services. If Housing Notebook never raised any money, we would still have a housing program because we need a housing program. If health programs never raised any money, fortunately they do, we would need a program to be an early alarm system for people in this in the region that we service about the health, about their health, about what's happening with their neighbors, so that they can know when, you know, when epidemics or some health crisis is afoot. Imagine if WBAI wasn't here to talk about the AIDS crisis. I think if we did a valuable job, a valuable service in alarming the alerting the community. community about just what was happening in that regard. So we do provide those services. However, we also have to pay the rent. That is real. The rent has to be paid. The lights have to be kept on. You know, salaries have to be paid. So we have those things to consider, too. It is not the sole consideration. In many instances, like I said, it's not the major consideration, but it's definitely a consideration. And if you're going to program and not take that into consideration, we're not going to be here. We're down here on Wall Street. You know, we're here. We got to pay this rent. So we have to. That has to be a consideration, but as I said, not the major consideration.
Could I add one other thing? That the I've been here over 10 years and gone through, well, that would be something on the order of 30 fundraising drives in various capacities with this station, and we always come to a point where after a few of these adventures, you get to see how our schedule works for us and how our schedule works against us. In an ideal circumstance, folks, we wouldn't have to preempt anybody in order to raise funds efficiently and to take $1 million in 17 days or something like that. We shouldn't have to be preempting anybody. We end up preempting people and sometimes removing them from the schedule for 2 or even 3 weeks during a drive simply because those programs are not generating the funds. Now, is that the fault of the programmer? Not always. Sometimes some programs are simply in the wrong location for the audience they're trying to reach. Some producers are less skilled at fundraising and have had less consultation on how to do it, and that's part of a department head's job. You can't do it with everybody on every single drive, but at least in my limited capacity, I've tried to work with some people in the last drive, and we'll work with more people in the next drive. This is obviously any change to a conservative institution culturally, such as our own, is going to put people on tenterhooks. But the change does have to happen, and the goal of the change, Bernard talked about vision and collectivity, the goal of the change, at least as I see it, and this doesn't mean I get everything that I want out of the schedule, by the way, but the goal of the change, nor does Bernard, by the way, that the goal of this change is to have a rationalized schedule and a reliable schedule so that listeners can find programs that fit with each other from Monday to Tuesday to Wednesday to Thursday, also that flow in terms of time. One of the things that we've been best known for in Radio Land is the amount of time people spend with their dial tune to WBAI. It's the TSL, the time spent listening, is something like 4 hours. In many, many cases. That's almost unheard of in most of Radio Land. So obviously there is an audience that wants to stay on this frequency, even as the various one-hour and two-hour programs come and go. But to enlarge that audience, those programs have to run in a sequence and speak to each other. Now, to do that, there is a lot of work to be done, not just in terms of the schedule, not just in terms of changes, but in terms of the promotion of programs and watching the clock and all of these very important things that no one really wants to explain or think about, and that are actually very hard to do unless you're sort of forced into it.
Mm-hmm. And many people poo-poo the Arbitron ratings, and I'm one of those who does that too. I mean, I poo at least, yeah, the Arbitron ratings, because I get the feeling that they don't often do a good job at locating or identifying our audience when it comes to people of color. I've never met anyone who has been involved in that process who was a person of color, be they white, black, or Asian. I mean, be they Latino, black, or Asian. And I just haven't met them. There may be, but I, in all my years, I think I might have met one person. So I don't think that in those communities they do a good job of identifying who's listening to a listener-sponsored radio station. But we, there is some value in what the Arbitron ratings show. For instance, it might show that those programs who do a strip are become very successful in developing an audience. So how do you do strips and still try and maintain diversity? I mean, we've added on to programs. We've added a new Native American program that comes on Thursday morning. We've added the student program, you know, with young voices, student voices, with young folks who are coming in. We've added a health program that has gone into the black community and identified certain practitioners who are empowering people to heal themselves in an age when there is no insurance for people. We've added two ecology programs during this period of time. We have returned to the air someone who was very well loved and respected in the African American community. I'm talking about Gary Bird, who was returned to the air, and we'll have to see just how well he does in his coming back. A lot of people say that they, you know, missed him and loved him and wanted him to come back. Well, he's here now. Let's see how people respond to that. We've gotten, even in the arts department, Luis Reyes Rivera, very well-known, well-respected Latino poet, who will be coming here and doing programs with us. So, you know, we've added some programs. We've shifted some programs around, and hopefully the goal of that was to enhance the listenership, to increase the listenership, to increase the time spent listening, the TSL, to WBAI, because that's very important when it comes to doing work. There are also some folks who we've been able to move around at times that were more advantageous to them. I mean, because it just happened to work out that way. Mike Fader has moved from Friday back to Sunday. Fred Hershkowitz is on Monday evenings now. It's a time that he feels is much better, and it also works for us. These two changes work for us as well as for the producers. There will be some changes that won't work for producers. Now, what do we do? Do we say, okay, well, since you can't move, we're going to do this in your interest, or do we do it in the interest of the station? Those are the questions that we have to resolve. But regardless of what you hear, and you may hear a lot of different things, that no one, with the exception of two programs in the entire schedule, has been taken off the air completely. Circle of Red Nations is still on the air. Don't believe everything that you've heard of. I've gotten a bunch of calls about Circle of Red Nations, and it's still on the air. It's not what the producer said it was. Well, it is 8:43. We're going to take a few of your phone calls. We'll see just who's out there. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. My name is Clarence. I'm calling to find out if Iradio was going to be coming back on the air. I'll sit back and listen and find out. Also, I want to know why was it taken off, and what was the problem with the stuff. I'll listen on to you already.
Okay. All right.
If I could answer that, I spoke to Anastasia just last week, and one of the things she said is that she's at this point doing other work and is, in fact, so busy that she would be having a hard time doing the show even if we were to bring it back. It was always a pilot program. Even the promo that Anastasia made said in the promo, it is a pilot program. It's a program that I happen to enjoy quite a bit because it was so provocative and a little bit dangerous. Some listeners felt exactly the opposite. And there were shifts, major shifts moving night shift into the midnight slot, into the midnight schedule. Part of that, Bernard, was because in night shift we were dealing with someone who'd been on the air, 13 years at 3:30 in the morning. In the other case, we had a very able producer who was moved into that midnight slot because it opened up very suddenly, and B, when we lost all the music, on September 11th, that morning music strip, there was I tried to scramble to find slots for people in order to keep them keep their hand in. Exactly what I was saying at the beginning. You know, even though the program that they had come here to do was not on the air, I wanted to find a way for them to stay engaged and involved in the station. That was one case in which the program didn't make it, but it's that door is not closed to that program, and certainly not to that producer, because she worked with me on City in Exile for a number of months before a music show opened up and before a radio even opened up. So that's pretty much what I can tell you about that story.
Okay. BAI, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning,
everyone. I'm very concerned about the fact that it seems that there are just these certain people who get on wake-up call. You know, Bernard White, I've been listening to you for so long, and it would be nice to have some Native American people on the morning show and not the same routine always, the same inmates and everything, which is true, of course, but, you know, as a loyal listener, it gets a little tedious. Also, I want to bring to your attention that there are certain broadcasters on the station who have used terms on me such as insect, and another one, that's David Rothenberg, and another one who said there's no free speech no free speech on my show, Monroe. And now the point is, how can these people, Al Lewis, for instance, say such a thing on WBAI?
Do you have a question?
I'm not saying he couldn't say...
Monroe, do you have a question?
Yes, I'm not saying he's not free to say anything, but he wasn't kidding around, and he was dead serious, and he didn't give me freedom of speech.
Monroe, you got to have a question.
Why I brought...
Okay. Let's see. BAI, you're in the air.
Bernard?
Yes.
Yeah, hold on a second. Just turn this down. I'm running through my new mansion here, trying to turn it down. How y'all doing?
Okay. We're doing
that's
okay.
Good. That's good, man. Bernard, what I want to say is that I've said this for years, man. I love your station. I love what's happening on there. But I'm finding that far too many people don't know about BAI. And some people, I think, you know, are very knowledgeable, very hip. But a lot of people don't even know about it. Or they'll say, well, is that station still on? I used to listen to it a long time ago. I think, Bernard, and I have suggested this, and I will keep on suggesting this, that you guys need to advertise. And the cheapest form that I've suggested before of advertising is just some Xerox flyers out in front of, you know, events, theaters, whatever. When people come out, this is what BAI do. And on the flyers, it should state what you do, your programming, the awards you won. You know, just sort of blowing your horn. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. That is,
and Bernard, I will supply the paper. Staples got a great sale on paper. You guys got a copy machine.
You got a deal.
Is that a bet?
Who's going to supply
Bernard,
the
paper? I will supply the paper. So help me God. I will bring the paper down probably next week. I'll put it on the calendar now. Bernard, do flyers, please.
You got a deal.
Okay.
I mean,
okay, and Bernard?
Yes, sir.
This is going to sound derogatory. I am still so glad it is no longer Big Mama's house. Have a nice day.
Thank you. You know, we have part of the responsibility of the listenership. Is that when you become a listener, you also become an ambassador. And that is to go out and tell people about WBAI. We, with our budget, we don't have a lot of money to advertise, but we try and do it as best we can. We have individuals who have stepped forward to do an excellent job. We have one person that comes to mind is Paul Sorville.
Absolutely. I wanted to mention the membership outreach campaign that's been part of the Concerned Friends movement in Westchester and especially in New Jersey. They have been out at events and they have been giving out thousands and probably now hundreds of thousands of flyers, leaflets throughout these months, trying to, again, develop awareness of WBAI, develop interest in it, and we hope that leads to, of course, listening and membership. They have done an outstanding job. over this time, and in fact a great deal of last year, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to them, and you know, we want that work to continue. And we look for the paper, and we'll get the paper to Paul.
And right, and we'll see what we can do to expedite that. BAI, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My only problem, I mean, I'm glad a lot of shows that I listen to, like Mike Fader and Fred and Emmanuel Goldson, I'm glad they're moving to different slots. But my only problem is that 3 to 5 slot during the week. I just can't listen to the person because he's not knowledgeable. It's my opinion.
Well, that is your opinion. I mean, there are other folks who probably have a different opinion.
Opinion, right. Yeah. But it's just... but there's a show, or there was a show, on Saturday afternoon. I don't know what happened to that program.
You're talking about Gut Bucket Matinee?
Yes, I think that was the name of it, yes.
Well, the host of Gut Bucket Matinee is fortunately pursuing his career as an actor and getting a lot of roles. So as a result of that, he's unable to do that program on a regular basis, but... Jasper will always be welcome here at WBAI to do programs.
Okay, because one day I was listening to it one day, and a few weeks later, it wasn't there. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, what happened here? You know, so that's why, that was my main question.
Okay, well, thanks for your call. BAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes. Oh, yes, 6.5 weeks ago, there was a Mexican shot dead by a former cop out where I live in Staten Island,
mm-hmm.
Ricardo Colon. For 10 days, the Mexican community mobilized, and there was like 100 people in procession on the 10th day. And we can't figure out why this isn't news on WBAI. You know?
You're saying that nobody on BAI
That's
talked
correct.
About this at all?
Excuse me?
You're saying that no one on BAI talked about this at all?
Well, you know, there's like a lot of stuff, and this got lost in the shuffle.
Oh.
And it's like, you know, a lot of people who listen to WBAI are looking for news about police brutality and stuff like that, right? So, like, the question is, why is this not treated at all, number one? Number two, treated like it's not important when, in fact, you know, the Mexican community for 10 days mobilized, 10 days straight.
Well, I don't know how this fell through the gaps. I know that you know me, and had you, in the past, whenever you've come to me with something, we've gotten it on the air. You didn't come to me with this one.
That's not true. For 6.5 weeks, every week, I put something in the mailboxes of people.
Well, mailboxes.
I don't go around bothering people who are busy people.
Okay. All right.
You know,
this is one of those.
Excuse me?
I said this is one of those that has fallen through the cracks. But if you get me the information,
I did put out information. On a weekly basis.
Okay, I'm asking you to put it in my hand. All right?
Bernard, I do not have the prerogative to simply walk up to people and say, you got to do what I tell you to do right now.
No, you don't. No, you don't have the prerogative to do that. But you can, when you say, hey, Bernard, how you doing? Or I say, hey, man, how you doing? You can say, hey, look, take a look at this. Sometimes things get lost in the mailboxes here, and I'm asking you to give it directly to me. So, you know, if you wanted to get on the air, because we've been putting on things, you know, that's how we get a lot of the news that we get, that people come up and say, hey, take a look at this. If you're interested, I know the people that you can contact to get more information out about it. So I'm suggesting that you do that in the future. You've done it in the past. I'm suggesting that you do it in the future. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. This is Muhammad from Brooklyn. Yeah, I hope that the Circle of Red Nations, I hope it's not going to go into that thing that you just called a hiatus.
Let me stop you there, because it's not a hiatus. They have been offered an opportunity to be on the air and not to go into a hiatus.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I just like to say this. It's of all the programs that deal with the ethnicity, I think it's the most important, and it should be a sacred cow because they represent the issue that has been unresolved for 400 years. And, you know, I've heard different other ethnic programs. Some of them are just PR. PR is for the promoters, and some are just tourists, you know, advertisements. But, you know, they deal with the cause. They're very informative. The different things are happening around, you understand, North America and you know, Canada, U.S., dealing with the Indian movement. It's a very informative program, and I hope you have it in a good time slot, brother.
Okay.
I mean, if I had, you know, I like Bob Laws. I like Gary No. I'm Afro-American, but if I had to sacrifice, you know, saying the Red Nations for them, no, it's a sacred cow, brother. I got to have that program.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you enjoy that program. I'm sure that people who like programs feel the same way about the programs that they like. And that's good. That we would like for people to feel as passionate about all of the programs. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, we have a little problem with your line. Sorry about that. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Just one second.
Hello?
Yes.
What I was going to... Someone had mentioned, you know, about putting flyers out. Well, do you have anything against people making their own stickers, bumper stickers?
You want us to stop your freedom of speech?
Well, there's my answer. You know, one of the things that you could do is maybe make up some bumper stickers and sell them at different functions. The other thing is that people can make up their own bumper stickers and put them on their vehicles. And one of the programs that you have on Thursday that I just absolutely love is First Voices.
You know, I don't know how many people know that there we did add on an additional Native American program, a wonderful Native American program done by Amanda Antiochusen, who have been just doing a great job since they arrived here at WBAI.
To me, that's probably one of the best programs that I've heard. Now, maybe it's because it comes on in the morning on Thursdays, but I tell you, the information is unbelievable. I just think that it's fantastic. And the other thing is that, you know, make, you know, people have to kind of maybe be creative and come up with some of their own slogans as far as a bumper sticker is concerned. Uh-huh. I think that's a great idea.
Okay, I agree with you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. And it's 8:58. We're going to have to move out of here. Coming up at 9 o'clock is Democracy Now!, and we have to make space for that program. We're going to be talking to you again. We know that this is has been much too short, and that we're going to be back with you. But I say that program changes is always a very difficult project. And we allow the producers to go to the air, and we're not going to tell them what to say or, you know, stop them from speaking. Whatever they speak, you know, it's up to them. We're not going to abridge their freedom of speech. So, but I just want to suggest to you that what was done or what is being done in terms of programming is what was perceived by both the program council and myself to be in the best interest of WBAI, not necessarily trying to take into consideration the interests of the producers, but it's WBAI and WBAI's airtime and listenership that was the main priority. Valerie?
No, just a... happy summer. The next report to the listener will be in July, hopefully at the beginning of the month, so that we can all, you know, get up to speed and inform you about the an event at the end of the month, which is the National Board Meeting, which will occur in Berkeley. I don't know whether we will be broadcasting a part of that. I suspect we may. So stay tuned to WBAI. We again thank you for your incredible support during our May drive, and of course ask you to pay your pledge.
Yeah. And we all pay our condolences to Valerie for the loss of her aunt, and we are deeply sorry about that.
Thank you, Bernard.
Okay, Matthew, coming up to